You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. We're switching on the box in Italy today as we take the temperature of the country's television schedule with our Rome correspondent, David Pleasant, who joins me now on the line. David, welcome to the Monocle Arts Review.
Hi, Ben. Hello. Nice to hear you.
Now, your choices today will take us through some musical mayhem and a little bit of dark mafia-esque drama as well. But first, I think we should start with the serious stuff and discuss the current affairs show that people have been turning to recently, which is Otto e Mezzo. David, why has this become the political show of choice for Italians?
Well, I think there's one very basic reason for that, and that's because of the channel that it's broadcast on. That's La Sette, the seventh, Channel 7. That it's got, by its very nature, La Sette, it has an air of independence in that it's not part of the state broadcaster RAI, which has three terrestrial channels, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And then there's Mediaset, which everyone knows about, which is the famously owned by Berlusconi, those channels. They're the big channels. So all those six channels together sort of compromise a huge amount of the Italian broadcasting networks. So to have the seventh channel and to have a political debate show on that, I think immediately gives this programme an advantage. So in a short answer, I feel it's because people are increasingly, over the last few years, are turning to La Sette, Channel 7, as a sort of voice of reason in what has become quite a media quagmire of a situation in Italy.
So it sounds as though they can stride into this realm of the media with some degree of confidence then, just merely knowing that they don't have to rely on any sort of monopoly by their side or under their brand umbrella. But tell me about the presenter then, Lily Gruber. How does she fare as the face of the show?
Well, she's a really interesting character in herself. She spent a large part of her career latterly as an MEP, a Member of Parliament in Brussels. So she has a political career of her own right. She's widely recognised. She's a political character, often featuring on political campaigns as an independent candidate over the years. More recently, she's gone back to her career as a TV host, and a very competent one at that, I have to say. She's quite a glamorous, typical kind of Italian glamourpus type character, but that doesn't detract from the fact that she's very hard-hitting in what she has to say, and I think has garnered a lot of respect for that. So she's been on this show, Otto e Mezzo, since 2008, and really the ratings, so the show started in 2001, but really under her guardianship, I would say the ratings have really increased, and it has, as I say, sort of become the political chat show of choice. Although I should mention that it isn't just politics that the show deals with. It's also cultural issues, economic questions, and so on. If our British or people who are familiar with the BBC are listening, there's a programme called The Moral Maze on BBC Radio 4, which kind of grapples with big ethical questions of the day. Big, diverse bunch of questions there. So this show touches on that as well, but there's a fair bit of politics, and I wanted to talk about one particular show that was aired recently, just last Friday, in which the Prime Minister was a guest.
Yes, well, I wanted to talk about that because the Italian Prime Minister, Matteo Renzi, he does make quite a few appearances on the show, doesn't he? And I mean, we get him, we see him popping up in the media over here in Britain quite a bit. And he's often described as a bit of a one-man show. And sometimes Italians can be a little bit critical of him for having that sort of attitude. But I suppose that means it's quite unsurprising then that he would be out there making regular appearances on television.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's a sort of a double-edged sword in a way. And that's something about Matteo Renzi in general, as you point out, that he's certainly not camera shy. And he's sort of likes to bill himself as a sort of very media savvy and media friendly political persona. Often he has his iMac on his prime ministerial desk with all the flags of the Republic behind him. So he's really trying to push this, Wi-Fi prime minister, as he likes to call himself. And that really fits into his appearances on this show. So last Friday, he was a guest. And I think it really, the billing of his appearance was really a kind of last-ditch attempt for him to pitch his cause for the upcoming referendum on the 4th of December, in which Italians go to vote about constitutional changes, big changes, and he's really pinned all his hopes and his political career on a yes vote to these changes. So if Italians vote against the constitutional changes, he's out, and he's promised that. So he really spent the good half an hour, well, the show is only half an hour long, he spent virtually all of that pleading with Italians to vote yes. It was quite a strange thing to see, quite a desperate plea, very honestly desperate on the part of him. And that left really very little for Lily Gruber and the fellow guest on the show, who was the editor of the Fatto Quotidiano, an online newspaper of respect. There was very little for them to say, to be honest.
Well, all eyes will be on Otto Emezzo then, as that referendum draws ever closer for Italians. Otto Emezzo airs on Monday to Saturday at 8:30 p.m. on La Sette. Now, we'll move along to a rather different programme, though I have to say I would love to see Matteo Renzi popping up on this one. Many people will remember the pop star Mika, who had a smash hit with Grace Kelly, amongst some other singles, quite a few years ago now. Well, the British-Lebanese singer has made what could be described as an unlikely leap to an Italian variety show. He's the host of this programme, which is called Stasera Casa Mika, and it sees the celebrity launch into a vibrant all-singing, all-dancing lineup every Tuesday night. David, I have to say, when I saw this written on paper, I had some doubts running through my head, and then I watched a few minutes of it, and I was absolutely hooked. It's such a bizarre creature, isn't it?
It's really strange, and I think there's some really sort of interesting things to consider about this show. In many ways, it's a very traditional variety show, something that Italians have been used to for decades, something that originates in the 1950s and 1960s from the beginning of television. But it's a surprise to see Mika, this international pop star, present it, and to mixed success. And I've been reading reviews and sort of gauging people's reactions to it, but you're right, it's completely crazy. It's a long show, like these old school variety shows are, so it's 2.5 hours long every Tuesday on Rai Due. And I think this is really what's interesting. This is an effort on Rai Due, the second state broadcaster, to sort of revamp itself and to gain a new identity. And I think by sort of getting this international host, they're really trying to go for a sort of glitzy, cosmopolitan, open, fun, loving, young approach. But I'm not sure if it really works.
Oh no, don't tell me that. I've just told myself that I'm going to go home today and start watching this myself, though I'll need to brush up on my Italian. It's not quite as good as Mika's clearly is. But I feel we can't really go further with this without giving our listeners a bit of an illustration for what it actually might be like. Let's hear a clip now. You'll have to picture Mika dressed in a black sequined suit, surrounded by glittering dancers, decked out on a Technicolor set.
Buonasera Italia, buonasera a tutti, benvenuti a casa mia. Volevo fare una festa, però non una piccola festa, una grande festa. E dunque vi ho chiamato un po' di amici, tutti che conosco. Siete qua! Dai!
Oh, David, it makes me want to live inside a musical. Describe to us what was going on there. If you possibly can, there's quite a bit going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, Ben, and there is a lot going on, very colourful. And I feel a bit harsh that I was so critical in my intro about the show. I'll try and be less harsh and give Mika a chance. You could see how hard he tried, especially with the Italian. I mean, it's not his first, second or third language. He's a bit of a linguist. So I think there's been a lot of preparation. Anyway, the premise of the show, as the title suggests, Stasera Casa Mika, so it's an evening at Mika's house, at his casa. So everything is sort of dressed up to sort of be like his house. So there's his bedroom, his living room, his little terrace. And then there's characters, different sort of sidekicks in the show, are his neighbour, his housemate.
And we probably should also mention a rather large studio audience as well.
Massive, yeah. I mean, like these huge Italian shows tend to do. So there's at least 500 people there screaming as well. But that's the premise. It's that sort of chat show 90s vibe, but in a very sort of strict, rigid Italian variety show format, whereby it's sort of singing and dancing with backing singers, backing dancers, and so on, a very choreographed spectacle, which sort of takes away from the sort of funky, more, like a sort of house party, sort of live feeling of shows from the 90s. But anyway, I think what's really interesting is that the sort of international guests that Mika has managed to garner from this show, and that's obviously due to his notoriety as an international performer, and he did have considerable success in Europe and United States with numerous hits. So, I mean, the frontliner on the show for this first show was Sting, who is a huge big deal in Italy still. I mean, he's sort of revered massively here, perhaps more than certainly in his homeland in the UK or in America. Here he's a really big deal. To get him to chat, to sing and really take part in the show, I think was a really big get for the channel.
David, we've seen a lot of the US networks start to invest more and more into big live spectacles. And a key reason for that is that people have been turning away from traditional television and increasingly relying on on-demand viewing and things like Netflix, obviously, which has really struck a chord in that realm. I guess this sort of plays into that sort of concept as well, where we've got a traditional broadcaster who is perhaps trying to draw back people to the live element of television by introducing that concept that if you watch this as an on-demand thing, there was an element of predictability there. You sort of know that it's all going to go to plan, whereas when it's live television, as television originally, of course, was, then you really don't know what's going to happen. Do you think that is going to appeal to Italians, or have people just moved on too far from that now?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I think it's at the crux of whether this is going to be a success or not. And I think you're right. This is a big investment on the part of the channel. You can see it's a big high cost production in terms of the guests, in terms of the studio. There's kind of off studio elements of the show as well. They throw Mika into the streets, kind of devise various situations for him to engage with potential viewers and the Italian public at large, which is quite interesting. So he's a taxi driver in Rome. It's all singing, it's all dancing. They've thrown a lot of money and a lot of writers and a lot of producers at this, and you can see that, you can feel that. But at the same time, I think you can feel it's a little bit, I think one flaw, major flaw that I read in one critique of this is that I think it's he as a presenter is trying so hard to be spontaneous, but I think maybe because of the language, he just doesn't come across as spontaneous at all. And so there's a slight clumsiness about it, but maybe I'm just being overcritical, and maybe it is the kind of show that terrestrial viewers really want. And Mika is the kind of person that, you know, your grandmother and your kid is going to love. He's got that kind of appeal. So I think those groups, perhaps the older, the very young, and some of those in between, aren't those on-demand customers. It's that core base that maybe are going to be pleased and really refreshed by this massive input on the part of the channel.
Well, I think if my grandmother spoke Italian, she'd be glued to the screen. That is Trasera Casa Mika. It airs every Tuesday night on Channel Rai Due. And if you are not in Italy, then good news, you can stream it online, but it probably won't be live. Not to worry. Finally, David, we'll talk about the Italian drama Gomorra, which has been a novel, a film, and has, of course, made its way onto the television screen as well. The second season aired this summer in Italy and has been showing on British and American screens more recently too. But David, if you could fill us in on some of the stories that have been happening in Gomorra, because as we mentioned, it does have quite a rich history behind it by now as well, doesn't it? It's existed in various different forms.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it was, as you say, it was a novel, a kind of scandalous novel that really had a big impact in terms of exposing the deep corruption of the Camorra, the Neapolitan version of the mafia. That book by Roberto Saviano in 2008 was then made into a film, which was an international success and really brought a lot of attention back to Italian cinema. And now we're in the second series of this TV series that has been made by Sky Italia. And a lot of the same characters, the main protagonist, Ciro, is most definitely there, guns a-blazing, as Machiavellian and violent as ever. Many new characters. I don't want to give any spoilers, and I think really why I want to talk about this is maybe from an industry perspective and maybe from a broader perspective. But but there's a huge amount of characters. It's a bloodbath, Ben. I should warn viewers, it's not for the faint-hearted. Someone said that there's the old saying, see Naples and die, referring to its beauty. I think with Gomorrah, it's you don't see much of Naples, but you see a hell of a lot of dying. I mean, I think the death count on any one of the episodes is into the dozens, which is quite a lot for such a TV show. Where, I mean, if you thought The Sopranos was violent, forget it. This is 10 times worse. But it's had a big impact abroad as well. And it's starting to show how Italy can perhaps be a TV exporter, which is sort of unusual or perhaps a little thought of factor in this new TV landscape.
David, we'll talk a little bit more about the content of the show in a moment. But first, let's hear a clip.
Quando te ne mena ferit?
Un'umiliazione, un morta agliagnere.
La mano che ci ha fatto male se bastis. E sa bastano.
Casa nostra è una bomba in esplosa, Genan. La miccia a mano ha tenuto tuo padre e Ciro.
Sì!
David, we featured Roberto Saviano on the cinema show here on Monocle 24 a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things he remarked about was that when he watches American series or American movies of a fairly similar ilk to Gomorrah, he often finds that the way Americans tend to use weapons and their relationships with their weapons tends to be quite romanticized. And one thing that he was very, very keen on with this series is that people, when they use their weapons, they use them in a more realistic way. They are actually dangerous. They're not out there as some big action sequence with a lot of anticipation behind it. They are there to serve a purpose, and I think perhaps that's why there's the rather large body count. What did you find in that ilk when you were watching the program?
Well, there's definitely that naturalistic, raw nature to what we saw in the film back in 2008. If viewers or people might remember, that featured a very young assailants to the gang using these weapons and really struggling to manage to use them. There's that sort of element of suspense and drama, and I mean, there's that sort of cushion, hiding behind your cushion, because you don't know who's going to get shot and how they're going to get shot, whether they're going to be able to use the gun. That's very much, much relevant through the series too. And I would say it is very violent, but perhaps it isn't a celebration of violence, like Saviano might have said. It's a raw depiction, and I think the camera is scared of the weapon. It's not a sort of Tarantino-esque celebration of gunfights and so on. There's something much, much more tangible and much more frightening about it. So in that way, I agree with what you say. It's a great drama for that reason.
And we're about to see the third season, which is due out next year. Are the people that you talk to quite excited about that? And do you find that there's a bit of a difference between people anticipating it, depending on whether you're talking to people from Rome or people actually from Naples?
Well, definitely. I don't really know about a regional difference, although I was in Naples quite recently. I was expecting people in Naples to be a little bit sort of scoffing at this TV series, because it's basically painting Naples in a very bad light. It's not making you want to go there at all. But I think there's a huge amount of pride that there's all this attention on Naples and, very importantly, the Neapolitan dialect or language. Most people would argue that Neapolitan is a language in its own right. All the series and film is performed in the Neapolitan dialect. And that's quite interesting in that the subtitles available for Italians, and the majority of people that I speak to Italians will need those subtitles. It's quite hard to understand that Neapolitan dialect without them. So I think regionality is important. Obviously, there's going to be a huge amount of excitement in Naples itself as to which areas of the city are featured. The second series had a big presence of the Centro Direzionale di Napoli, which is a sort of CBD area of Naples, these sort of gleaming towers that have seen better days and provide a fantastic set to the drama. So maybe there's this excitement as to which areas and what aspects of the city is going to be showcased next. But nationally, yeah, I mean, it's the show that everyone's talking about. You know, with on-demand TV, it may have been running a few months ago now, but people are still watching it. There's still that sort of lag in terms of timing that makes it still very relevant. It's still on people's lips. People are talking about different characters, about plot lines and so on. So I can only imagine that's set to increase.
Indeed, David, and I wouldn't pay too much attention to its depiction of Naples. It's a beautiful city. David, always good to talk to you. Gomorrah has been snapped up for another 2 seasons by Sky Italia, and the third is set to hit Italian screens next spring. Season 1 was broadcast by Sky Atlantic and Sundance Television in the UK and the US, respectively. Well, that brings us to the end of today's programme. Thanks to David Pleasant over in Rome. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow, but for now, thanks for listening and goodbye.